Good day and welcome to the National Conference of State Legislatures DHS Real ID Briefing Call for NCSL Conference Call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I'd like to turn the conference over to Ben Hush. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon, and again, thank you for joining us for today's National Conference of State Legislatures Conference Call. My name is Ben Hush, and I am the committee staff director for NCSL's Natural Resources and Infrastructure Committee. As I'm sure most of you are aware, earlier this month, the United States Department of Homeland Security issued an implementation update for the final phase of Real ID implementation. Before I turn it over to DHS for details regarding the implementation schedule that they released, just a few quick housekeeping notes. All lines are currently muted, but we will hold a question and answer session at the end. We will provide details on how to ask a question once DHS finishes their briefing. Additionally, following today's call, please remember to check NCSL's Real ID implementation webpage. It really does have everything a legislator or legislative staffer would need to know regarding Real ID, including updates on state implementation legislation, as well as any changes regarding state compliance status. Additionally, we will be posting slides from DHS, essentially highlighting what they will present on this conference call. And with that, I'd like to turn it over to Elena Clark, Deputy Assistant Secretary from the Office of Intergovernmental Affairs, U.S. Department of Homeland Security. Elena, the floor is yours.
Hi, Ben, and thank you to you and to the National Conference of State Legislators for having us on the call today, and thank you to all the legislators and staff that were able to join as well. Today we want to provide you a briefing on the final phase of implementation of the Real ID Act, which the Secretary announced back on January 8th of this month. And with me today we have Ted Sobel, who is the Real ID Program Manager up here at headquarters, and I also have Howard Goldman, who is a Senior Counselor at the Transportation Security Administration as well, since this final phase does discuss the implementation at airports. So with that, I will turn the call over to Ted Sobel.
Hi, thank you very much, Elena. Thank you very much to NCSL for giving us this opportunity to discuss Real ID and for all the participants for calling in. I'm really going to do my presentation in three parts. The first one's covering just a level-setting overview of Real ID, where it comes from, what it does, what it doesn't do. The next part talks about where we are in terms of status of states, and then finally we'll get into the enforcement. My goal is to try and do this summary fairly rapidly to maximize your opportunity to ask questions. So first off, Real ID, where it comes from. Well, it's based on a recommendation of the 9/11 Commission that the federal government should set standards for the issuance of sources of identification such as driver's licenses. Congress then took that recommendation and used it as the basis of the Real ID Act. The Real ID Act passed in 2005. It covers 56 jurisdictions. I apologize just for convenience. I tend to just use the term states, but it's actually inclusive of 50 states, the five U.S. territories, and the District of Columbia. The Act does three things. It directs DHS to establish minimum requirements for the secure issuance and production of driver's licenses and ID cards. We did that through the publication of the Real ID regulation in 2008. Second, it authorizes DHS to provide grants to states to help them meet those standards. Through 2008 and 2011, we provided $263 million in grants to states to help them with their secure driver's license programs. States continue to be able to use Homeland Security grant program funds for driver's license purposes. And then finally, it prohibits federal agencies from accepting for official purposes driver's licenses and ID cards from noncompliant states. The Act itself, the statute, defines official purposes as accessing federal facilities, boarding federally regulated commercial aircraft, and entering nuclear power plants. In addition, it gave DHS the authority to add to those purposes, but when we published the regulation, really just kept to the three purposes that were directly directed in statute. We have not added to them. Next, in terms of what Real ID does and what it does not do. What it does do is it sets up standard minimum security standards in three areas related to secure driver's licenses. The first one deals with the information that goes into the license that are provided by the applicant. Specifically, it requires proof and verification of identity and lawful status of the applicant. So this includes the presentation of documents and where available the state providing electronic verification of that information directly with the source, such as Social Security Administration, Passport Office, et cetera. The second set of standards deal with the security of the card itself. It requires a card design that includes physical security features to prevent counterfeiting, to prevent the tampering with that token. And finally, the final group of standards have to deal with safeguards for the underlying issuance and production of the driver's licenses. So these are things like background checks for employees who would be handling personal information, who are able to issue driver's licenses, making sure that there are security plans in place, such as the making sure that you have controlled access only to blank driver's license stock, things like that. Almost as importantly is what Real ID does not do. First off, it does not authorize DHS to regulate the issuances of driver's license and identification cards by states. The issuance and production of cards remains a state responsibility. DHS does not regulate that. State participation in the minimum Real ID standards is voluntary. However, the statute does set up consequences if a state chooses not to meet those requirements. Secondly, it does not create a national ID. It does not create a federal database of state driver's license information. It does not create new federal access rights to state information. The card itself and any information exchanged between the applicant and the state DMV or DMV equivalent remains in the prerogative of the state. In other words, if that information is a vault, the state retains the keys to the vault. They do not hand it over to the federal government. They do not hand it over to other states. They retain the control of that information, including the circumstances in which it's shared. Thirdly, Real ID does not prevent a state that is otherwise compliant from also issuing a non-compliant card. They can issue a non-compliant card for any reason, whether it's for persons who do not are unable or unwilling to prove lawful status, or maybe that it's a state that requires proof of lawful status but will allow a non-compliant card for persons unable or unwilling to meet the full requirements of proofing identity. So the reasons vary very much from state to state. Real ID allows understands that and allows that flexibility. Really, the only requirement that we look for in a non-compliant card is that it is incorporates unique design and clearly indicates that the document is non-compliant, so we can tell the difference between a compliant card and a non-compliant card. Moving on to the status of states, I like to first, before getting into sort of the state-by-state considerations, take the big picture. The big picture is we're about 93% of the way there. I base that statement on there being 43 composite benchmarks in Real ID. These are the basically 43 standards in Real ID. Multiply that by 56 jurisdictions, you have 2,408 boxes that we're basically looking to see if they're checked or not. So when 2,408 boxes are checked, then we have nationwide compliance. Right now, 84% of those boxes are checked. I mean, these are standards that have been implemented. An additional 9% states have committed to implement, but need additional time. often because of their IT refresh cycles. But they plan to do it. They provided us information on when they're doing it. So it's just that's a question of time. The commitment is there. So what's left is about 7% where we have insufficient information from the state to be able to determine one way or the other, or that the states currently tell us that they do not plan to meet. Now, although we are 93% of the way there, it is not evenly distributed across states. We have 23 compliance states. These are states that have met all 43 requirements. We have 27 states that are not compliant but have demonstrated sufficient progress to receive an extension. And we have 6 states that are not compliant and have not demonstrated sufficient progress to receive an extension. This last group of states are the ones that are currently are subject to enforcement. There is no enforcement procedures right now with states that are compliant or if they're non-compliant and have an extension. The 6 states that are not compliant and do not have extensions are Illinois, Missouri, Minnesota, New Mexico, Washington, and the territory of American Samoa. But I would say even in that those last two categories, the 27 non-compliant states with extensions and the 6 non-compliant states without extension, on average, we're still looking at about in the mid-80s, somewhere between 84-86% of the standards are being met by those states. So even where states are non-compliant and don't have an extension, there has been substantial progress overall. But I think the key difference is that they really have not demonstrated a path forward where they could become compliant. Moving on to enforcement. We started off with enforcement. States were required to become compliant in 2013. At the end of 2013, we released our first schedule for the phased enforcement, specifically enforcement of real ID requirements at the at federal facilities and nuclear power plants. We started off in April of 2014 with a pilot here at the Department of Homeland Security. We're really testing what procedures would be in place to be able to meet the statutory requirement that we prohibit access based on for people presenting IDs from states that are not compliant and that do not have extensions. We took those lessons learned, and in July 21st of 2014, we rolled that out to restricted areas for all federal facilities and for nuclear power plants, restricted areas being defined as facilities where access is limited to federal employees, federal contractors, or their guests. Then in 2015, we began rolling it out to semi-restricted areas, which are any federal facilities where the public can access but must present ID. We started off in January of 2015 at facilities with a federal security level of 1 or 2. These are basically single agency facilities and generally smaller facilities. In October of 2015, so just a couple months ago, that expanded to most remaining federal facilities, including those with security levels of 3, 4, and 5, which are really multi-tenant facilities, and finally military facilities, so military bases. We still have one additional phase coming in on federal facilities, and that is for visitors to the White House, which will come into effect in August of 2016. That brings us to the announcement that we made earlier this month, which is the schedule for TSA enforcement for purposes of boarding federally regulated commercial aircraft. We made the Secretary of Homeland Security made an announcement January 8th laying out this timetable that we will be focused immediately and over the next basically 2 years of conducting outreach with both states and with the public to make sure that once enforcement at airports begins, the public is aware that states have had every opportunity to become compliant or to go down that path to compliance that might allow us to grant them extensions. So we had that sort of passenger notification going on through 2016 into 2017. Then starting January 22nd, 2018, we began initial enforcement. This would be Phase 4A, where TSA will accept licenses from compliant states and from non-compliant states with an extension, as well as the other forms of identification described up on the TSA website. And for passengers without acceptable identity documents, they would not be allowed to enter the sterile area of the airport or board the aircraft. Then we would follow up with full enforcement, Phase 4B, beginning October 1st, 2020. And this is where TSA will accept compliant licenses issued by compliant states, as well as other forms of identification described on the TSA website. Passengers without acceptable identity documents would not be allowed to enter the sterile area of the airport or board the aircraft. So really the difference between the initial enforcement and what happens in 2018 and in what happens in 2020 is it shifts from the focus being what is the state of issuance of the license to in 2020, is the license itself compliant? So another way of looking at that is once a state becomes compliant, they can begin issuing compliant cards. Your residents have until October of 2020 to get a compliant card if they wish to use their driver's license for boarding an aircraft. Again, this does not affect any other forms of ID that TSA accepts for boarding aircraft. I think that is my presentation, and I'd like to turn that back over for questions.
So, Ben, we're ready to take questions. We would just ask for individuals asking questions, if you can just identify yourself and the state that you're calling from, so I think that'll help us better address a question or concern that you raised.
Great. Operator, if you could just do a quick, I guess, overview of how participants can ask a question.
Thank you, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question at this time, please press the star followed by the one on your push button phone. If you're using speaker equipment today, please lift the handset before pressing the star key. Once again, if you'd like to ask a question at this time, please press star one.
Thanks. And while we wait for that first question, I guess I'll just go ahead and take kind of a one of the powers of the moderator and ask the first question. And I actually got this from a member after we sent out the briefing announcement, and really just a question. I know this is not, this aspect is not handled by DHS, but has there been any consideration to reduce the cost of a U.S. passport, especially for those residents that reside in a non-compliant state, since Phase 4 does apply to domestic air travel?
No, there has not, but we would point out that passport does, the State Department does offer a passport card, which is a reduced cost version of a passport, as opposed to the passport book is what you're used to seeing. So there is a less expensive option already available and that would be able to be accepted by TSA. In addition, those states that offer an enhanced driver's license, those independent of a state status under Real ID, TSA and all federal agencies will continue to be able to accept enhanced driver's licenses from all states, and that includes specifically the two states right now that offer enhanced driver's licenses that do not have extensions, Washington and Minnesota. So I want to make that perfectly clear that Real ID does not in any way prohibit a federal agency, including TSA, from accepting enhanced driver's licenses. For those not familiar with the term, because I know the media tends to mix them up quite a bit, enhanced driver's license is something very different than a Real ID compliant driver's license. Enhanced driver's license is a driver's license that is issued meeting specific federal standards that allow the license to be used as a border crossing document. So it's something that a state enters into agreement with the federal government to meet these standards, and as such, it meets and exceeds the Real ID standard. So it is acceptable as a form of identification completely independent of the Real ID, state status under Real ID.
And just a quick follow-up, are there, do you know off the top of your head which states are currently issuing those?
Yes. Someone will correct me if the ones I miss. There's five states that miss it that issue them. New York, Minnesota, Washington, Vermont, and Michigan.
Correct.
Yes. Got them all. First time.
Thanks. Operator, I didn't know if there were any questions in the queue.
We do have a question from the line of Nathan Mansfield. Please go ahead.
Yes, this is Nathan Mansfield with the Illinois House Republican staff. One note of clarification I wanted to see. Are passports and passport cards going to be allowed for entrance to federal buildings?
Yes.
Okay.
As well as additional forms of ID. It's not just passports and passport cards. I know that's what people tend to default in thinking. On our website, you'll be able to find something called the Interagency Security Committee Guidance on Real ID Enforcement. There is a list of other forms of ID that we recommend agencies accept in addition or in lieu of a driver's license. So it's quite extensive and goes beyond passports and passport cards. Likewise, TSA on their webpage has a list of the documents they provide us that they accept as well. So I challenge everyone to expand their thinking beyond just passport and passport cards.
And this is Ben with NCSL. Just a quick follow-up to that. We have put the TSA, except the additional documents that TSA deems acceptable, up on NCSL's website. So for those concerned specifically with air travel, we have posted that on NCSL's Real ID page.
And I will say that the list that was drawn up for that ISC guidance document was based on the TSA list. So although I don't think they're 100% identical, they are largely identical.
Thank you.
Do we have any additional questions in the queue?
Our next question is from the line of Peter Covenant. Please go ahead.
Hi, this is Peter Covenant, staff attorney with the Legislative Council Service in New Mexico, one of the non-compliant states. So my question is, will New Mexico have to ensure that all non-compliant licenses are appropriately labeled with not for federal purposes or one such line by 2020 for them to be usable, or will they sort of be valid till 2024 and usable to get on an airplane, for example? Or is that October 1st, 2020 date firm?
Sorry, I'm not sure I follow that question. Would you mind restating it, please?
Yes. New Mexico, current licenses are not marked. We don't have Real ID compliant licenses. If New Mexico does indeed start issuing Real ID compliant licenses and gets an extension or is considered compliant, the current licenses out there will still not be stamped, not for federal purposes. DHS has said that those non-compliant licenses from states that are deemed compliant will be good until October 1st, 2020 to get on airplanes. However, a lot of those licenses will be valid for driving in New Mexico until 2024. And so the question is there a thought that DHS might extend that date once more?
Well, to answer the first part of the question, which is what happens in October 2020, is the card itself would have to be compliant. So whether it was a card issued to a person who would ultimately get a non-compliant license or a person who may later choose to get a compliant license, sort of if it's a legacy card, that doesn't matter.
Okay.
As of 2020, it has to be a compliant license.
Okay, so that's firm.
The longer that the state takes to begin issuing compliant licenses, the less time is available for that recredentialing. And I remind you that the dates, were ultimately for the states to become compliant in January of 2013. So the October 2020 kind of represents almost a full 8-year cycle. So that's the background on that. To the second point on what DHS might consider in the future, I can't speak definitively on that.
Sure.
I will say the October 1st, 2020 date is set in regulation. So any changes to that date would have to be accompanied by a change of regulation, which, as many of you know, is not necessarily the easiest thing to do.
Thank you very much.
But ultimately, that would be a decision for in a later administration and a later secretary.
Of course.
Thank you. Our next question is from the line of Jordan Russell. Please go ahead.
Hi, my name is Jordan Russell, and I'm with the Office of the Speaker in Oklahoma. And currently, Oklahoma licenses are issued by independent agents who contract with the Department of Public Safety. Are there any states who are now compliant that also use an independent agent system to issue compliant licenses? And if not, are there prohibitions in the law to using an independent agent type of system to issue compliant IDs?
I'm going to turn this over to Steve Kozar from my team, who's my subject matter expert on this.
There's no prohibition from a state using third parties or private contractors to issue compliant licenses. I don't know right now if there is a state out there that's currently compliant that's utilizing third parties to issue the compliant licenses. However, if a third party does issue a compliant license, they must meet the same requirements that the state has required. So any employee that issues a compliant license or collects information that could be changed on a compliant license must follow the same security measures and the criminal background checks as regular state employees.
Okay.
Thank you. To summarize, we're not aware of any states that do that. There's certainly no prohibition, but it doesn't change the nature of the requirements.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question is from the line of Charles Ortega. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Charles Ortega with the House of Representatives in Oklahoma, and I'll say hello to Jordan. My question is this. Number one, could you please repeat for me the collection of data. I think you listed a couple of things that the DHS could not create a national database. Could you expand on that just a little bit? And also, you mentioned that states were able to qualify or apply for grants to set this in motion. Could you elaborate a little bit on that also?
Sure. On the first point, what I said was Real ID does not create a national ID card, does not create a federal database of driver information, and does not create any new federal access rights to state data. That in, you know, short order, you guys control the information that you collect from your residents. It doesn't change that process. It doesn't change who can access it one way or the other. You guys still control the keys to that vault. And I'm glad you brought this up because this is something that I believe that there's still, even after 8 years, close to 8 years since the regulation was put out, and now that we've had 23 states actually sort of live it as compliant states, there's still a lot of misinformation that gets repeated out there that says, oh, it's a national ID card. Well, if it's a national ID card, we probably wouldn't need to have this kind of conversation. We would issue a national ID card. You know, these are state driver's licenses that are in the control of the states. It's just that they're meeting a minimum security standard. There is no national database. We have a privacy impact assessment that has been out there publicly for many years, maybe dating back to 2008 as well. So it's all out there in black and white, exactly what the privacy impact is. There is no federal database. You can ask any of those 23 states that I mentioned that are compliant. If they've had any experience with a national database, if they've had any experience with having to have new access rights to federal government, and I am extraordinarily confident that the answer will be no, because if there was a federal database, I think I would know about it by now. The last joke aside, there is no federal database. There is no consolidation of that information at the federal level. It remains state information, same as before Real ID Act was ever passed. On the second point, on grants, in 2011, we had a dedicated grant program for Real ID uses. For secure driver's license uses from FY 2008 to FY 2011. After that, it was block granted, along with a lot of other individual dedicated grant programs, into the Homeland Security Grant Program. So secure driver's license use projects are eligible for funding under the Homeland Security Grant Program. However, it's sort of like the states get a certain amount of money and each state decides to a large extent how they're going to spend it. So it just becomes, it's not dedicated money to secure driver's license programs. It's available money. So the state would then have to choose that's what they want to spend the Homeland Security grant funds on.
Very good. Thank you.
Great.
Thank you. Our next question is from the line of John Snyder. Please go ahead.
Yeah, this is John Snyder with the Transportation Committee staff in the Commonwealth of Kentucky. We are a non-compliant state right now that has an extension, and we are drafting some legislation to address the issue, and our Transportation Cabinet, which is our issuing authority, has come forward with some recommendations. One of the recommendations that they have come forward with was a grandfather that would allow current license holders to either get a Real ID compliant license or just continue on and stay with the old one. And a lot of this comes in with timing issuances because we're on a 4-year cycle. If we pass a law this year, it probably will not take effect until January of 17, just for administrative purposes. That would kind of bleed the 4-year cycle out into 21. And if we grandfather in current folks, anybody that wants the Real ID is going to go ahead and get it before the 2020 deadline. That's the assumption. Is it okay as far as the feds is concerned? Would it be permissible or acceptable for us to still have valid licenses out there in circulation without the non-Real ID compliant notification?
Let me try to deconstruct that a little bit.
Okay, I'm sorry. I know it's a confusing question, but
there was a couple. There was a couple of points in there. The first is again what TSA can accept in 2020.
Right.
They're really only accepting a card that was issued in compliance with Real ID. So for the most part, we ask and encourage states to. That have a star as a marker of what a compliant license.
Right.
So it might be the easiest way to think of it is, for the most part, we're looking for the licenses with the star after 2020.
Okay. All right. So it won't affect you all. It won't affect you all either way if we have the star license and I really think most of the folks are going to get the Real ID compliant license just for ease of convenience. But if we have some that are out there. And people are aware and they're forewarned that they can't use them. The fact that those are in circulation, does there need to be a specific?
So there's no problem with those being in circulation. So, again, to try and put it in other terms, you're talking about a situation where a state is basically has three forms of driver's licenses
right.
in circulation,
yeah.
A Real ID compliant license, a Real ID non-compliant license, and a legacy license.
Right. Right.
So the existence of a legacy license doesn't affect your state's ability to be
okay.
compliant or our ability to accept compliant license. Just after 2020, we would not be able to accept.
Right. Understandable. Okay, thank you.
And I just want to also make sure that everyone on the phone understands that the Real ID Act and regulations do not support the issuance of a compliant license on a grandfathered basis.
Right.
So it doesn't. You can't give a star license just to replace the legacy license.
Right. Right. They're still going to have to come in and present all those documentations,
right,
even though they're existing license holder.
Exactly. They
right.
still have to go through that process.
Right. Okay. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you for asking the question.
Thank you. At this time, I'm showing no further audio questions.
Great. I actually got one question via email, and I'm not sure what kind of information can be discussed on this call, but the call comes from a North Dakota legislator specifically asking for an update and whether or not their new licenses are deemed compliant.
If you'd like to forward that on to us, we'd be happy to respond directly.
Yeah, that's not a problem.
Yeah, that'd be easy. I'll take this lull or possible ending questions just to reemphasize a couple of points because I know, again, they recur a lot, and this is a rare opportunity for us to speak with legislatures directly. I can't emphasize enough the repeated stories of there being a national ID, being a federal database, being a open season on state data. Those reports, no matter how often they're repeated in the press, they are not accurate. They are not true. There is no database. There is no national ID card. All of the information, real ID does not affect state information. The second thing sort of dovetails on it is the best sources of information are directly from DHS. We provide updates on our website. We have an incredible staff here at Intergovernmental Affairs. We've got great partnerships with NCSL and NGA and other groups. That is really where you're going to get your best source of information. Don't react to, I encourage people to take anything they read in the newspapers or hear in the reports with a grain of salt, because honestly, they are as often as inaccurate as they are accurate. And so we spend a lot of time sort of answering questions that were motivated by maybe some poorly reported information. You have the opportunity through IGA, through our partnerships with NCSL, to sort of get that information right from the source, and we're happy to provide that function, and we encourage you to take advantage of it. And I think that might help as your legislatures consider possible actions on real ID-related legislation. It might help make sure that at least there's a basic level set.
Great. And, operator, just before I wrap this call up, I did want to do one last check to see if there are any questions that came in.
We did have a couple more questions come in. First one's from the line of Senator Carla Nelson. Please go ahead.
Hello, this is Senator Nelson. Thank you. This has been very informative. I have three brief questions. I want to go back to one of the earlier comments. What is the difference between the enhanced driver's license and the real ID compliant driver's licenses?
The difference is essentially enhanced driver's license is designed as a border crossing card so that you can use it when you're driving to Canada. I think driving to Mexico as well. So any of the two major land borders. So as such, it has additional requirements above and beyond something required for a real ID compliant license. So one of the things that you'll see confused in the newspaper reports is sometimes they'll say Real ID requires a radio frequency ID chip, RFID for short.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
A Real ID compliant license does not require RFID, whereas an enhanced driver's license does require it, just like you have one in your passport. So,
and it's only issued to U.S.
citizens. Yeah, thank you. And Steve Kozar pointed out as well that only because it is essentially for border crossing purposes the equivalent of a passport or a passport card, that it is only available to U.S. citizens, whereas a
Real ID compliant license is available to citizens as well as residents who have another form of lawful status.
Oh, very good. Clear, very good distinction there. And then my second question was, and as you know, I'm from Minnesota, one of those non-compliant states. One of the concerns seems to be that there's a clause in the federal legislation that would allow the Department of Homeland Security to expand its use of Real ID at will. In other words, right now it's only for certain things, but there seems to be some concern that there's an open-ended clause that gives DHS authority to expand its authority at some point. Could you comment on that, please?
Sure. I very much appreciate you asking that question. I mentioned at the beginning of my overview, when the Act defines official purposes, it says accessing federal facilities, boarding federally regulated commercial aircraft, entering nuclear power plants. I also mentioned at that time it does say any other purpose that the Secretary shall determine. However, when we actually put pen to paper and did the regulation, we did not expand beyond those three purposes. So, yes, it is true that there is some authorizing language in the legislation, but, you know, we've had the regulation out there for close to 8 years. The regulation limits it to the three things that are specifically defined in statute, the federal facilities, nuclear power plants, and aircraft, and it does not exercise any that additional authority to expand beyond that. So by regulation, we limit ourselves to those three uses that are defined in statute.
One follow-up to that, would it take additional regulation then to expand the official purposes, or is that at the sole discretion of the Secretary?
It's a hard one to answer, maybe because I'm not a lawyer. For the most part, it is our expectation that it would take amendments to the regulation. However, I can't categorically rule out that there might be some other way that I'm not aware of. But really, we have no intent of expanding beyond those three purposes.
If there's someone that could get me that definitive answer, I think that would help Minnesota quite a bit. I'm on the work group that is working on this. I know that's one of the major concerns of some members.
Yeah, I mean, there are – I'm not sure there can be a definitive answer on that beyond what I have said, because I think it gets into you don't know what you don't know. But, you know, again, it would be very public for any additional uses there might be. Like I said, that's why we would go through the regulatory process to make sure that the public has an opportunity to be forewarned and to comment and influence any changes.
Thank you. And then my last question is very brief. Someone who has the passport card or the passport book, is that sufficient for them to secure a real ID or an enhanced driver's license?
Yeah, for the most part, yes.
It's an acceptable document for proof of identity to establish or to receive a real ID compliant document.
Identity and lawful status.
Okay, you don't have to bring the other documents as well. Simply those, one of those two types of passports would be sufficient.
Well, there would be additional documents, but they're not related direct to that same point. So like a Social Security card is required,
proof of address.
Yeah, proof of principal address. So there are a couple of small requirements beyond the passport in and of itself.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate that.
And again, we're happy to work with your group to answer any technical questions you might have.
It'd be great to get a contact number for that then. You can do that offline.
We can follow up offline on that.
Thank you so much.
No problem.
Thank you. Our next question is from the line of Julius Bailey. Please go ahead.
Yes, thank you. My name is Julius Bailey. I'm from the New Jersey State Senate Majority Office. And New Jersey is one of the states that received an extension until October of 2016. So my question, you mentioned before that there were something like, I think there were over 2,000 boxes. So my question is, what are the precise boxes or standards that need to be met in regards to Real ID? And what does that include IT compliance or computer compliance?
I'll start it off on the big point. So what I said there are, you take the Real ID regulation, that's what needs to be met. We categorize them sort of as to basically, do we boil it down to 43 standards per jurisdiction. And when I said the 2,408 number, that's the 43 standards need to be met by each jurisdiction multiplied by the number of jurisdictions. So there's 43 requirements. I should also say to sort of, again, do some myth-busting, we do not have the ability to waive whether a state has to meet individual requirements or not. So it's, you know, we evaluate a state state's progress against all 43 requirements. You'll see sometimes people will write that, no, in fact, there's 200 requirements. That's really just a level of granularity. So the 43 requirements are composite benchmarks. If you really wanted to slice and dice and get them into each subclause, that's when you get to those higher numbers. But it's a lot easier to deal with just 43 requirements when we're discussing it. Steve, do you want to address the point on the IT?
Well, basically what it is that particularly for the IT issues within the state, is if the state's system's capable of collecting and maintaining the data, then that would meet the requirements of the regulation. And quite frankly, most of the states have those systems already available for their issuance process anyway. So it's nothing it's nothing beyond what the states are currently doing right now.
Yes, another way to put it is there's no requirements specifically about what they have to do with IT, but the IT in place has to support their ability to meet the overall requirements. So if there's a requirement that there is a requirement that you're verifying lawful status against the SAVE, the USCIS database, you know, you have to have the IT infrastructure to be able to handle that. So
okay.
I hope that clarifies.
Yes, you've answered. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question is from the line of Jesse Coulter. Please go ahead.
Hi, this is Jesse Coulter from the Texas Legislative Council. I have two questions. I think I'll let you answer the first one first and keep them separate. My first one is about the wording that has to go on a non-compliant license. Do you have particular words that have to appear, or is that sort of up to us?
So we have a sort of baseline, which is not for federal identification or not for official purposes. We are able to work with states to help them if they want to customize that language. So there's different flavors of it, but they kind of, to us, they capture the same ideas. So part of the our review process is approving the language that the state uses. So there's a lot of flexibility for the states to crafting that language, but still it's something that the state and DHS needs to agree on.
Okay. Thank you. My second question is about becoming a compliant state. So if we end up with two different types of licenses and one is totally compliant and the other is used for state purposes but is not compliant for some reason, does that kick us out of being in the compliant category? Do all our IDs have to be compliant?
No, it does not kick you out of the compliance category as long as
the two types of IDs are marked appropriately so we can tell the difference.
Okay. I think that's it. Thank you.
And generally, just for our terminology, we call those a two-tiered system.
Mm-hmm.
Where a state is offering a compliant card and a non-compliant card. And there's about a dozen states that do that. So.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Hush, there are no further questions at this time, sir.
Great. Thank you. I actually got another question via email. And the question, I guess, regards those five states and one territory that are currently that do not have an extension. And if DHS were to issue an exempt or, I guess give an extension to those non-compliant states, should they take further action at some point in the future, I guess the question is, will those non-compliant legacy licenses once again be valid, at least as pertaining to aviation requirements, or I guess phases 1 through 3.
Yeah. So at any time where a DHS at any time that a state demonstrates sufficient progress to receive an extension, DHS will grant it. And once we grant that extension for the duration of the extension, federal agencies will be able to accept all driver's licenses from the state. Up until we hit 2020, when it really becomes the point of an extension in a lot of ways goes away, and it just becomes about whether the card itself is compliant. So up until 2020, if tomorrow those six states came to us and were able to show here's our path forward, and able to demonstrate that that they have a way to make progress, then we can grant them an extension, and the extension goes into effect immediately. There might be a little bit of lag, just as we have to push the information out to the federal agencies so they know about the change of status for the state. But we have processes to do that, and we've done that many times in the past. So we've had anywhere up to 10 states that may have started a year without an extension, but by the end of the year had an extension. So we've got a good record to do that. Look, we want to work with the states. We want, the states and DHS and the federal government share a common interest in having secure driver's licenses. And we want to work with states on to support any efforts made to get a secure driver's license. So we go into it with that perspective.
Great. Thank you so much. And I guess with that, I will bring today's call to a close. So thank you again, Ted, Elena, and Howard at TSA. Thank you so much for joining us today and, not only providing an overview, but also answering a good amount of questions and answer. I'm sure there will be additional questions and additional follow-up in the months to come. And for those folks on the phone, thank you for joining us. And if you have any questions, please feel free to reach out to myself or anyone at NCSL. We are more than happy to kind of act as a conduit between you and DHS or TSA. So with that, I'd like to, again, thank everyone. Have a great weekend. And for those on the East Coast, enjoy the snowstorm.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes our conference for today. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.